Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From the April-May issue of Phoenix Home and Garden magazine, Garden Solutions, and a letter to the readers from Noelle, a.k.a. AZ Plant Lady, and she writes, "Hello, friends. I look forward to springtime in the desert when plants around my home are covered in vibrant blooms. Pollinators such as bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds are busy collecting pollen and nectar. I enjoy watching them while I'm out in the garden or through my office window. Our dry, warm weather is the envy of those who are still enduring the cold in much of the country. For us, it's also a busy season for planting and other tasks, including pruning. With higher temperatures on their way, getting your garden ready for the coming summer heat is vital. I share my best watering tips to ensure that your trees, shrubs, and ground covers are getting the water they need and how to ensure that you are irrigated efficiently. Now is also an ideal time to add summer-loving annual flowers and warm-season vegetables. And if you haven't added new plants yet, there's still time to install desert-adapted ones, and here I recommend my favorites. The spring season can vary in length depending on when the 100-degree heat arrives, so I encourage you to get outdoors and enjoy this wonderful time of year. Questions? Send them to info@azplantlady.com. They may be featured in a future Garden Solutions. And here's one of those questions that was sent in. I have several agaves growing in my landscape, and some have produced babies. Can I replant them around my garden? If so, what is the best time to do so, and how do I remove the small agave from the larger one? And here's the answer. Many species of agave reproduce by growing offsets, also called pups or volunteers, which are attached to the parent plant by a thick, fleshy root. Think of them as free plants that you can place in your landscape, and spring is the best time to do so. A sharp shovel is most effective for separating the pup and cutting the root before moving to its new location. Water weekly to help it form new roots through the first summer and then less frequently. Be intentional with how many you add, as the offsets will also produce babies as they grow, which can become a tiresome maintenance task. Get your watering system ready for summer. As temperatures rise, so do the water needs in your garden. Proper irrigation is vital to the health and survival of the plants around your home. Now is a great time to ensure your system runs efficiently and is ready for the upcoming summer. While your irrigation system is turned on, walk around your landscape and make sure that water is dripping out of each emitter. If you cannot locate the emitter due to the size of the plant, lightly scratch the soil with your finger to see if it's moist. Due to the high mineral content of our water, deposits can build up that plug the emitter's small holes, causing plant stress or even death. If you see a shrub or ground cover that looks worse than those next to it, it could be due to an emitter issue. During your inspection, note emitter caps may have popped off, resulting in a stream of water. It's helpful to have new ones on hand to replace those that are no longer working. You can help prevent mineral buildup within your system by flushing it out, which helps remove deposits and debris. Open the cap located at the end of the main drip irrigation lines and run the water for 2 minutes until the water runs clear. If you can't locate the end cap, consult your landscape professional on how to flush your system. Leaks can occur, but aren't always obvious. Check your valve box for signs of moisture or water, which indicate a broken or leaking valve that should be replaced. If your water bill shows a large increase, a leak in your watering system may be to blame. Many irrigation controllers have a backup battery that saves the watering schedule in the event of a power outage. In the absence of a backup power source, your controller will revert to factory default settings, which may not provide enough water for your plants. Look up the name and model of your controller to see what type of battery is needed and when it should be replaced. Turn on your sprinkler system and make sure that each head is watering the grass only with no overspray. Make necessary adjustments and replace any that are cracked or have uneven spray patterns. Adjust your irrigation system or schedule to meet the increasing water needs of plants as summer heat approaches. It's important to water deeply to encourage healthy root systems that are more resilient to hot temperatures and require less frequent watering. Here are the recommended watering depths. Trees, 2 to 3 feet. Shrubs, 18 to 24 inches. ground covers and vines 18 inches, cacti and succulents 12 inches, palms 2 feet. Use a soil probe or rebar to test your watering depth. Water your plants and wait 1 hour before inserting the probe into the moist soil. It should go down as far as the water has penetrated. This will tell you whether you need to adjust how long your irrigation runs each cycle to get to the desired depth. Perform this test on 2 to 3 plants of each type to get an overall idea of how deeply you're watering. Plants don't need the same frequency of water throughout the year, and you should adjust the schedule on your irrigation controller seasonally. Visit wateruseitwisely.com for seasonal watering schedules for specific plant types. Monthly garden tasks for low to mid elevations. Native and desert adapted plants can be installed through May. Dig holes twice as wide as the root ball to make it easier for new root growth, which is vital for the survival of new plants. Add a 2-inch layer of organic mulch, such as bark chips, to preserve moisture and lower soil temperatures rather than landscape rock, which absorbs and reflects heat onto young plants, which are particularly susceptible to heat damage. Add heat-loving summer annuals from nursery transplants such as Celosia, Gallardia, and Periwinkle. Sunflowers and zinnias are easy to grow from seed and thrive in hot conditions. The key to success for growing plants in pots is to use large containers approximately 20 inches tall and wide that help to insulate roots from hot temperatures. Replenish the top 6 inches of soil with a planting mix formulated for flowering plants in containers and feed with an organic fertilizer for flowering plants. Allow wildflowers to dry up before pulling them out. Once their foliage is no longer green, cut them back to the ground using a string trimmer or a lawnmower. This will also help to dislodge any remaining seeds, ensuring that they will come back the following year. Birds will also enjoy eating the seeds from the dried wildflowers. It's time to plant your warm season edible gardens. Sow the seeds for cantaloupe, okra, snap beans, summer squash, and watermelon. Experience the different varieties of basil, which are easy to grow from seed or transplant. Sweet basil is the most common variety, but other varieties include cinnamon, lemon, purple, and Thai. Add lemongrass, oregano, sage, and thyme for more herbal goodness in the garden. For high elevations, in late April and May, transplant broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, and kale. Carrots, radishes, and leaf lettuce can be started from seed. Add pansies, petunia, and snapdragons for a welcome splash of color. Sow seeds for cosmos, gallardia, comfrina, and marigolds. Beware of any late freezing temperatures and protect frost-tender plants as needed. And here's another question that was sent in by a reader. Every spring, I find little green fruit on the ground around my orange tree. Is something wrong with my tree, or is there a reason it can't hold on to all the fruit? And here's the answer. What you describe is known as citrus drop and is a normal occurrence. In late winter, citrus trees produce hundreds of blooms to maximize the chance of them being pollinated by bees, which result in tiny, non-ripe green fruit. However, the trees don't have the resources to grow them all into ripe grapefruit, limes, oranges, lemons, etc. So in mid-spring, the tree drops the excess and only keeps the fruit that it can grow. Young citrus trees are likely to release the most fruit, while more mature trees hold on to more. Now here are some tomato growing tips for spring and early summer. If you've ever tasted a tomato straight from the garden, you know that the flavor and texture are far superior to those from the grocery store. In spring, these plants are starting to flower and produce fruit. Here's what you need to know to help keep them healthy and maximize the harvest. Tomatoes need at least 6 hours of sun per day, but the intense sun of summer can be too strong for them to tolerate. Beginning in June, cover plants with 50% shade cloth. Feed tomatoes monthly using an organic vegetable fertilizer to satisfy their need for nutrient-rich soil. Water to a 12-inch depth and wait until the top 2 inches of soil is barely moist before watering again. Both over- and underwatering can cause problems with discolored foliage and cracked tomato fruit. Mulch around each plant using compost or straw, which helps cool summer soil temperatures. Keep an eye out for light green tomato hornworm caterpillars that blend in with the foliage. Remove them as needed. And once temperatures hit 90, flowering will cease, but the existing fruit will continue to ripen into early summer. At the beginning of fall, remove the shade cloth and your tomato plant will begin to produce again. And here's the last question that was sent in by a reader. Something is eating the foliage of my bougainvillea and roses. There are small half-circle cutouts on many of the leaves. What insect is causing this, and how do I prevent it from happening? And here's the answer. The good news is there isn't a bug eating your plants. What you're seeing is evidence of leafcutter bees. The female lines her nest with small pieces she cuts from the foliage and lays a single egg within it. They are solitary native pollinators and are most active in spring. Pesticides aren't recommended or effective since the bees don't eat the foliage. The next time you see the telltale semicircle cutouts on your plants, know that you have a welcome pollinator in your garden. And in each issue of Phoenix Home and Garden magazine is a section called Fab 4. This issue focuses on notable roses. These modern varieties are heat tolerant and feature longer blooming periods, making them well suited for desert climates. First on the list of four is the Romantica Ball Gown Rose. This is a hybrid tea flower, grows medium pink spring and fall, 4 to 6 feet high by 2 to 3 feet wide, needs well-drained soil. Grows in zones 6 through 11, needs full sun, medium water, medium maintenance, attracts bees, birds, and butterflies. The hybrid tea rose was first introduced in 1867 in France. It became synonymous with the long-stemmed roses commonly used in modern floral bouquets. With its dark green, glossy foliage and upright, bushy growth habit, this variety is highly disease-resistant and blooms repeatedly. Why we like it? Ball Gown's large, dense pink flowers feature as many as 100 petals each, and its romantic appearance and extended vase life make it ideal for floral arrangements. Its relatively strong fragrance resembles that of a classic sweet rose. Second on the list of four, the 4th of July rose. This is a climber. Color is red and white, blooms in spring and fall, grows 43 inches to 15 feet high by 26 inches to 6 feet wide. Needs well-drained soil, grows in zones 5 through 10, needs full sun, medium water, medium maintenance, attracts bees, birds, and butterflies. Climbing roses produce long, arching canes that are trained to climb upwards, making them best suited for arbors, fences, pergolas, and trellises. First introduced in 1999, this medium to large flowered variety featuring glossy, deep green foliage is especially disease-resistant. Why we like it? 4th of July's patriotic fireworks-inspired cup-like flowers in striped velvet red and white feature sprays of 4-inch blooms with a petal count of around 15. Exposed stamens make it especially attractive to pollinators. This variety emits a spicy, sweet, apple-like fragrance. Number 3, Dream Come True Rose. This is a grandiflora, colors yellow to red, blooms in spring and fall. Grows 4 feet by 6 feet high by 4 to 5 feet wide. Needs well-drained soil. Grows in zones 5 through 9. Needs full sun, medium water, medium maintenance. Attracts bees, birds, and butterflies. The grandiflora class of roses is a cross between a floribunda and a hybrid tea and is characterized by large blooms and long stems, making them ideal for use as cut flowers. First introduced in 2008, this medium to tall, upright, and bushy variety featuring matte green foliage is especially disease-resistant. Why we like it? Dream Come True's large flowers up to 5 inches in diameter with a petal count of around 40 are yellow, edged in ruby red, blushing to solid ruby red as they age. Its multicolored display blooms continuously and the flowers emit a mild tea-like fragrance. Finally, number 4 is the Sunbelt Plum Perfect Rose. This is a floribunda. Color is purple, blooms spring and fall, grows 2 to 3 feet high by 1 to 2 feet wide, needs well-drained soil, grows in zones 5 through 10, needs full sun, medium water, medium maintenance, attracts bees, birds, and butterflies. The term floribunda was first coined in the early 20th century and is a cross between a tea rose and a polyantha, with either a single or double bloom type. Floribundas are generally smaller shrubs with an abundance of flowers, hence the name. Heat-tolerant Plum Perfect features glossy green foliage. Why we like it? Plum Perfect's medium-sized, intensely plum-colored double-petal flowers feature around 75 petals each and hold their color from start to finish during their long blooming period. With its smaller growth habit, this rose is ideal for beds, borders, and containers. Also from the April-May issue of Phoenix Home and Garden magazine, Hollywood Ending, full of lush, colorful florals and glamorous touches, this landscape is paradise for a valley couple, by Lauren Tita. In the heart of Paradise Valley, a home's landscape unfurls like a Hollywood movie, an ensemble of lush, colorful plantings set against a dramatic score of burbling fountains, rustling palms, and the occasional thrum of a passing hummingbird. The scene culminates in the backyard series of outdoor rooms, all situated around a glistening azure pool where the eyes are drawn upward to a perfectly framed view of Camelback Mountain. This carefully choreographed recreation of retro Hollywood grandeur was a coordinated effort between Phoenix Home and Garden Masters of the Southwest award-winning landscape designer Jeremy McVickers and interior designer Tracy Simpson. Originally built in 1986, the stately home itself is something of an architectural enigma. While its Mediterranean and Santa Barbara influences are evident, the house resists easy categorization. Over time, its red brick exterior was softened with paint, and its sprawling outdoor spaces were refined to align with the current homeowner's vision, a landscape that marries timeless elegance with livability. "You don't see homes like this anymore," says the husband. "It's classic. The bones were there, but it needed the gardens to pop, so we built on top of that." In the front, McVickers replaced what was once mainly gravel with sprawling lawns, which extend around the house, and lined the driveway with little olive dwarf olive hedges and flowering pear trees. "At first, we were going to throw in a few new plants," the landscape designer says, "but once we started showing the owners our ideas, it evolved into a much bigger scope. We ended up gutting it, minus a couple of olive trees in the driveway." Frequent visitors to Los Angeles, the couple was drawn to the chic vintage glamour of the Beverly Hills Hotel, which inspired the pool area. The landmark's signature green and white stripes were reimagined in sunny yellow and white with two-tiered umbrellas and chaise lounges that encircle the retail pool. "The owners loved the palm patterns and color scheme found at the iconic hotel," Simpson says, "but we felt that yellow was more of a color for the desert and popped against the pool's aqua tile." Palm Springs also played a role in the design vision. "We wanted a tropical look, but to keep it native-looking," says the homeowner. McVickers achieved this balance by layering palm species of varying heights with agaves and desert-adapted flora. The property's existing citrus orchard was enhanced with additional fruit trees, a nod to the homeowner's appreciation for fresh, homegrown produce. "Instead of being too tailored with hedge upon hedge, we mixed in a little bit of the Santa Barbara look with some succulents, agaves, cardboard palms, ponytail palms, and Madagascar palms," McVickers explains. "It has a level of formality without being like an English garden." Throughout the estate, intentional spaces invite different moods and moments. Under the colonnade, a pair of chairs offers a quiet refuge for morning coffee and mountain views. A raised patio above the pool, anchored by a fireplace, creates a cozy evening retreat. Near the citrus orchard, a fire pit encircled by rocking chairs becomes a favored gathering spot for cigars and tequila-fueled conversations. And the outdoor kitchen, newly designed and fully equipped with a bar, pizza oven, refrigerators, and a smoker, anchors the home's social heart. To break up the use of travertine throughout, Simpson specified two-tone graphic tile for the sofa seating area and men's cigar lounge fire pit area. "The idea was to keep the transitional concrete tile, but add a Mediterranean star element," she says. "We liked how the black and white played with the other elements." Handcrafted, custom-carved fountains and statuary designed by McVickers' team create what he calls moments of surprise around every corner. "The idea was that out of every window you could see something beautiful, whether it's a water feature, a sculpture, or a tree," he says. The vibrant colors and custom-carved pieces make this landscape truly one of a kind. There's a happiness to it, a brightness. Even when the plants are dormant, it's still gorgeous. McVickers took the home's gardens from what was once haphazard and overly serious to a meandering, lush paradise, punctuated by manicured hedges, layers of florals, from ruby reds and pert pinks to demure whites and fiery oranges, and a menagerie of palms. It's California meets tropical Florida, he says. For a couple who divide their time between multiple homes, from a steel and glass retreat in Santa Barbara to a mountain lodge in Lake Tahoe, this Paradise Valley estate is the perfect blend of two favorite styles, where old-world charm meets the rugged beauty of the desert. When you're in the house, the landscape draws you outside, says the husband. When we're in town, the doors are always open. Dogs are running around, the gals can hang out by the outdoor kitchen, and the guys can be in the other end smoking cigars and carrying on. And like a classic film, it will never go out of style. The layering of the plants makes it livable and approachable, he reflects. As the landscape grows and matures, it just gets better and better. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week for the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called Ruby's Roses. It was written by Donna Gundel Krieg. And there's a quote here from Cervantes in Don Quixote. Fair and softly goes far. Ruby's Roses. The neighborhood kids nicknamed the cranky old couple Crazy Jack and Ruby Rednose. Rumor was that they sat inside and drank whiskey all day. It was true that Jack and Ruby Jones preferred to keep to themselves. About the only words we ever heard from them were, "Keep out of our rose bushes." The rose bushes were 70 beautiful floribunda shrubs that served as a fence between our house and theirs. The rose fence took quite a bit of abuse, since our house was the neighborhood hangout. I was 11 at the time and the oldest of six active girls. We should have played our softball games elsewhere to avoid hurting the roses, but we secretly enjoyed irritating Crazy Jack and Ruby Rednose. Jack and Ruby had a son, who we nicknamed Crazy Jack Jr. He was due to come home from Vietnam. We heard he'd been discharged because of a nervous breakdown. The neighborhood had thrown a big party for Jimmy Brown when he came home from the war, but no one offered to have a party for Crazy Jack Jr. The day Crazy Jack Jr. was scheduled to come home, we had a neighborhood softball game in our yard. Johnny McGrath was trying to catch a fly ball. He stumbled over one of Ruby Rednose's thorny rose bushes and fell on top of several more. Boy, did he yell, but the roses were the ones that really suffered. From my vantage point at second base, it looked like about 10 of them were damaged pretty badly. Johnny's timing was terrible because as he lay there swearing at the roses, the Joneses' pickup rolled into the driveway. The truck screeched to a halt and Crazy Jack Jr. sprang out. He ran full speed toward Johnny. "You little punk," he screamed. "Look what you've done to our family's roses. You've always been trouble. I'm going to fetch my gun and shoot you." Well, the next few minutes were a blur. The neighborhood kids ran for their lives. Ruby and Jack tried to restrain their son. He continued to yell threats and profanities. Ruby wasn't my favorite person, but I felt sorry for her when I saw her tearfully pleading with Crazy Jack Jr. Finally, they coaxed him inside. Meanwhile, my sisters and I tore into our house. Breathlessly, we told Mom what had happened. She put down her sewing and scolded, "Girls, I have told you not to play softball near those bushes. Come outside right now and help me fix them." "Mom, we thought you didn't like the Joneses," we protested. "They're mean to us. Besides, Crazy Jack Jr. might shoot us." Mom just glared at us. We followed her outside to help mend the rose fence. While Mom examined the damaged roses, my sisters and I hung back, plotting how to get out of the thorny job. As we whispered back and forth, the Joneses' garage door opened and Ruby slowly walked out. She looked sad, and it wasn't her nose that was red. It was her eyes. Ruby walked over to my mother. The two women stood looking at each other through the new gap in the rose fence. We girls held our breath, waiting to see who would shout first and what terrible things would be said. How much trouble would we be in when it was all over? Suddenly, my mother stepped forward and hugged Ruby. "I'm glad your son came back home," she said gently. "It must have been a horrible experience in Vietnam. We're sorry about the flowers. The girls will replace them if we can't fix them. In return for all the bother, they'll help you weed the roses this summer." My sisters and I looked at each other in horror, but Ruby smiled at my mother through her tears. "I know we're particular about these roses," she said, "but they're very special to us. When my mother came from England, she brought one tiny part of her favorite rosebush. That was her reminder of home." She paused a minute, then said sadly, "My mother had a magic touch with flowers. Over the years, that one plant multiplied into all these bushes. Since she died, I've tried to keep them up, but I just don't have her magic touch." Her voice was all choked up. "Mom died while Jack Jr. was in Vietnam. He just found out about her death today. When he saw her rose bushes damaged, it was the last straw. Ruby mopped at her tears. Once we got him inside and calmed down, he admitted he's out of control. Jack just drove him to Clinton Valley to be admitted to a treatment program. By now, I really felt bad for the Jones family. What a sorrowful homecoming. I could tell my mother and sisters felt the same. We all enjoyed the roses as much as you do. We'll be happy to help you care for them, my mother said. You know, some people say I have a magic touch with flowers, too. Soon, both women were down on their knees, talking and examining the damaged bushes together. A few weeks later, the plants all returned, with vigor. My mother and Ruby worked together on the roses all summer long, and many summers to follow. So did my sisters and I. A friendship formed between the families that would include countless birthdays, graduations, and weddings, including Jack Jr.'s. Years later, when her son left home and her husband died, Ruby became part of our family, spending many happy hours in our house. She wasn't Ruby Rednose anymore. She was Aunt Ruby, and the rose fence wasn't a fence any longer. My mother had turned it into a bridge. That's called Ruby's Roses, written by Donna Gundel Krieg, one of the many stories that make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week for Sun Sounds Radio. I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.